Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
Has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two.
Gilmore.
Oh, big stop.
Oh,
brother.
Lead Toledo artist. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Jordan. Open. Chicago with the lead.
Hello and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann. Joining me as always is Rich Cage. How's it going, Rich?
Good.
And we are also joined again by Adam Johnson of Basketball Pantheon. Adam, welcome back.
How's it going, guys?
Good. And we today are continuing our top 50 series, looking back at current players and seeing what their case might be for being in the top 50. Jason Kidd is our case today. And just a little bit of a overall look at some of his numbers. He is 30th all time in win shares, 169th in win shares for 48. He is 27th in box score plus minus, 11th in value over replacement player. He is fifth all time, or excuse me, he has been on the All NBA first team 5 times and on the second team 1 time. He was the runner up to MVP in 2002. He also has 4 appearances on the All Defensive first team and 5 on the second team. He has 2 seasons in the top 10 in win shares, no seasons in top 10 in win shares for 48, but he has 6 times a top 10 in value over replacement player. He is 2nd all time in assists and 2nd all time in steals. Looking at his rankings on other lists, he is 43rd in the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball Pyramid. And he is 28th in Slam Magazine's 500 Greatest Players. So he's obviously one of the greats all time as a point guard, a great passer, great defender at his position, the master or a master of the triple-double. I guess we can't take that away from Oscar Robertson, but certainly one of the masters of the triple-double. Lots of versatility at the position. Not much of a shooter, and sometimes could be a chemistry problem, but overall, certainly the good stuff outweighs the bad. So, Adam, what do you think of Jason Kidd?
I really like Jason Kidd. I did kind of all growing up, and I have him in the top 50. The stats are a little interesting. There's not a lot of, like, if you're going over the win shares for 48, he's obviously not even very high at all on that list. And so it's not necessarily that's what you're going to look at to make his case. But every single team he played on or went to immediately got significantly better. The Mavs kind of at the end there, but in his prime got significantly better. And it is weird that he was traded multiple times in his prime, but there seems to be reasons for each one of those. And I do have him in. The triple-double stuff is awesome. I mean, he just kind of did everything possible to win. And was really a complete player other than being like a great shooter. He ended up being pretty good. I really like him and kind of set the mold for like the big point guard kind of quarterback style of point guard.
Real quickly, before we get into a lot of stuff, I wanted to just kind of do his comparisons, look at advanced stats from era, position, all that stuff. For era and position, he's 10th in assists per 36. He's 38th in win shares per 48 amongst guards at era. Third in win shares, 6th in defensive, box plus minus, and then 1st in value over replacement player. Value over replacement really, really likes him. And interestingly enough, only 15th in turnovers per game. So an efficient passer as well. All-time in his position, he actually does really, really well in this. 18th in assists per 36, 48th in win shares per 48, 6th in win shares, 5th in defensive box plus minus, and then 1st all time amongst guards in value over replacement players. So that kind of interesting. I would not have guessed that whatsoever.
Yeah, and of course that's post 74. So that,
exactly,
but still, that's a good sample of the NBA. That's higher than I would certainly would have expected. I mean, I think all the numbers other than the shooting are positives for him. I mean, you know, he clearly was a great passer. A lot of evidence that he was a great leader and a great defender. And Adam's right. I mean, he really did have, you look at when he went to Phoenix, they got a lot better right away. New Jersey got a lot better. They had other, there were other reasons for that too, but they definitely got a lot better. And, you know, he took them to two finals. It was a weak East, but he was still, clearly the most important player on that team, sort of driving, that team. And he managed to, really be an effective player into his late 30s, and as Adam mentioned, also improved dramatically as a shooter, particularly from three, and was able to sort of change the way that he played and still create a lot of value for his teams. And, there are a couple of bad endings. The way the things went in Dallas early in his career were not so good. I can't remember if Phoenix didn't really end that well, or if it just was just
he. Well, he got that. Was it a DUI or a domestic thing?
Domestic violence. Yeah,
that was that, right? Okay, okay. I sometimes mix up Jason Kidd domestic violence versus DUI. Yeah, he had that, and they kind of decided they wanted to wash their hands of him. Correct.
Right. It was a wash of hands, and they also cited. There's a multiple articles that cited. They wanted to get younger, so they traded for Stephon Marbury, which is awesome.
One clarification I wanted to make when I was going over those numbers, I said value replacement, he was the best among guards. That guy, Michael Jordan, was actually the top. I meant point guards. He actually is the top amongst point guards. Magic Johnson, 77.41, and Jason Kidd is 78.20. But no, Michael Jordan is the best guard in value replacement.
That makes sense.
A shocking development. Yeah. I'm sure somebody just threw their laptop across the screen, but no. It's Michael Jordan's number one. So some very upset Michael Jordan fan is already tweeting at us, but there you go.
Yeah. So Adam, like, where, so what else are there any other, things for Kidd that you think separate him from maybe the other, either all the all-time point guards or the point guards from his era?
A little bit. The value of a replacement thing was really interesting. I was noticing that too. I mean, he led the league in the lockout shortened season, which, that's a weird season to lead the league in something, but that season was probably his best statistical year. And that was a surprising stat that he was that high on all of those. But also, I think this is going to sound super like sports writery or coachy, but he was so good at just making simple, like winning plays, like deflections and just like the right rotation at the right time, like Drew Key charges, which I'm not a huge fan of the charge call anyway, but he was good at it. And making like the right pass, even if it wasn't an assist. It wasn't like, he's not like a Jason Williams where it was like just kind of crazy flashy. Like it was just the instinctual, like right pass, and his instincts were amazing on defense and offense. And so I think stuff like that is very, very important when you measure, these players, when the margins are so fine between like the stats, things like that can separate certain guys.
One question for me, there's a couple of guys who I wonder who we would put, if we would put ahead or behind. One is Steve Nash. And the other, and he might be a little bit of a surprise, but I think it's a comparison worth making, is Chauncey Billups. And both guys, obviously were all, had similar length careers, played around the same time. They all had very different skill sets. I mean, Nash obviously was, a tremendous shooter. All three guys were great passers. Billups and Kidd, I think, were similar in level in defenders. Billups was a better shooter and scorer, but not as strong of a passer and as of a rebounder. So I don't know. I'm just curious where in those where if you had to pick, one of those guys or two of those guys, what order would you kind of go?
I would definitely have Nash and Kidd in a class above Billups. I think that not just the peak, but also even just the length of their prime was greater. Billups, it took a while to really get going in terms of like being a top tier point guard. On our list, we have both those guys actually really close, Kidd and Nash really close together, and Nash is just ahead of him on our rankings, and we have Billups pretty far back from that. from that pack. But no, I think the kid Nash thing is really interesting. And there are some like YouTube clips that have like games where they played against each other and shows like, you know, kind of just their highlights. I'm sure you guys have seen, you know, stuff like that. And those battles are really interesting because they're very similar, but also their size and like the way they kind of moved was very different. So, and obviously Kidd was a much better defensive player, but Nash was a much better shooter. So it was like really interesting watching those battles. And they really kind of played to a draw. It wasn't really like one guy stood out more than the other. But yeah, so in terms of those two, those guys are very, very close. And I would definitely have both of them like in the top 50 and Billups, you know, not.
Yeah, I think I would have to agree as well. And that's not a slight on Billups. Just looking at top 50, though, I mean, we really have to, you know, slim this down to, you know, the best of the best or whatever. Yeah, I would agree that I think that those two are kind of a class above Billups for the same reason. Not that Billups' peak wasn't there, but the fact that, you know, Billups has, you know, those 5 or 6 years where he's just kind of floating. And you know, not that he was horrible during those years, but it's a far cry from what he became, you know, a little bit later. Whereas Kidd, you know, it took him a little while to get to that, what I would consider peak, but even his lower stuff was still pretty damn good. It wasn't until, you know, the late Phoenix years, you know, as you mentioned, like the lockout year before that, and then New Jersey, when he just kind of exploded as kind of an all-around great player and really led that team to stuff that, you know, I don't think anybody, you know, looking at that talent roster, I think that's the biggest thing that I take from Jason Kidd's career in a lot of ways is looking at those guys, yeah, in a relatively weak East, absolutely, but looking at that roster and what he was able to do and how, you know, once they faced the Western Conference in the finals, it was over, especially that Lakers team. But man, that team is not very, I mean, really on paper, it's not a great team, but a lot of that was just Jason Kidd being that good at that time and perfect to fit those sort of guys, especially, you know, guys like Richard Jefferson and Kenyon Martin and, I mean, God, Aaron Williams is his center and stuff. It's just like not a very good team at all. But Kidd, you know, by virtue of him just being so good at running an offense and so good at leading a team at that point, you know, got them to consecutive NBA finals. And I think that's remarkable.
Yeah, for sure. I actually think Billups is a little bit closer to Kidd and Nash, although and we'll talk about Billups. We have another show about Billups coming up, so we'll talk more about it then. But I guess one thing, you know, and you raise this question, which I think is interesting. You know, do we think that is there a part of Kidd that's hurt by being too unselfish? I mean, we definitely want point guards to or one effective thing about point guards, we think, is obviously being able to just, you know, to get the ball to other guys and to create situations for them to score and to be, you know, to create for others. It's obviously an important part of the point guard role. But what would he sometimes defer too much rather than, you know, than score himself?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Okay, sorry. Little bit like myself is like, because like look at the scoring numbers, it's not very impressive. And then I was like, okay, does that hurt the legacy or does it not? But then I was like, if he scored, you know, 3-4 more points a game or something like that, or his counting, you know, total points was like higher, he probably wouldn't have led the league in assists, you know, 4 times or whatever. So it's, I don't know, like where do you go? And then that takes away from his legacy as well. So it's like, what exactly do you go with that route? I think there's you know, certain teammates and teams that he was on where they said we wish he was more aggressive, you know, scoring, because he was good at it when he really wanted to be. But I don't know, in terms of like his whole career, I think it was generally favorable that he was as unselfish as he was.
I agree. You know, there's a period in Phoenix, and I read a lot about that, of where, you know, the teammates said, please, we need you to score. And he went out there and he, you know, he got, you know, 30 plus points per game and, you know, five times in the last 19 games of their season or whatever, you know, had a stretch. He had 36, 32 and 31 in 3 consecutive games or whatever. And prior to that, he had never gotten a 30 point plus game ever. So you sort of see that where it's like, oh man, this guy really, if he really wanted to, you know, could he be that good of a scorer? But then in some respects, I'm with you, Adam. I kind of like how he was, you know, working, getting other guys shots, getting other guys open, working with that. Whereas, yeah, if he just became a selfish scorer, I don't know if maybe you lost a little bit of that intrigue that you got with him. Because I think he scored. I mean, really, we talk about him, and he's not like a guy who just completely shied away from scoring. You know, he's going up for a layup, but instead he would kind of pass it. You know, that was sort of the Jason Williams thing, you know, in Sacramento, right, where there was opportunities. It was like, oh, man, just come on, just put the layup up instead of that. Whereas I don't think Kidd ever really did that. I think he always seemed to have a way to find the right guy. You know, somebody was streaking down, you know, somebody was cutting, somebody was doing that. Whereas you never really see a situation where it was obvious that he had the better possession or had the better shot and then passed away. I think he just very much was looking for other guys a lot of the time, and a lot of time found those guys and led efficient offenses and led, you know, really good offensive as well. So yeah, in one respect, you do kind of you know, think of, hey, what could have been. But I don't think it hurts his legacy, because I think we think of him as an all-time great passer, an all-time great, you know, facilitating point guard. And I think that's fine. I think that's exactly how we should think of him. And I don't know if the scoring would have really mattered that much if he put up, you know, two or three more points per game, if it meant a downgrade, you know, in his assist numbers and what he was able to do with offenses. So,
yeah. One of my favorite Jason Kidd memories is it would either have been the Nets or Mavericks, I forget exactly, but around 07-08, when it was late in the game and he was coming down the court and he was near the sideline and he saw Mike Woodson's, the Hawks coach, step onto the court. So he like bumped into him and was able to like draw like a technical foul because you know, the coach was there on the court bumping the player. And then they ended up winning that game by like 1 or 2 points. It was, you know, I was mad at the time because it's the Hawks. I'm a Hawks fan, but it was like one of those like little, like just smart, like, you know, who else would take advantage of that other than Jason Kidd? There are very few guys who, you know, would have done that and been able to pull that off. And, you know, it was just a very, very, very small thing, but I think a telling thing.
Well, one thing I'm always curious about, Adam, I'm kind of curious on your thoughts too. If he wins that MVP in 2001-2002 season, do we sort of think of him differently, or does he become a slam dunk for the top 50? I'm not a guy that usually does that sort of thing. I like to kind of look at the overall picture versus that, but I feel like, you know, he has an MVP under his belt. It kind of looks a little bit different, right?
Yeah, I think it does a little bit. I mean, no one's really arguing that he should have won that one because Duncan was unbelievable that year. But
oh yeah, yeah.
But it was. But yeah, if he did actually somehow pull it off, if it was one of those like, oh, he just like great turnaround, we'll give him the MVP. That probably does help the legacy. I mean, it certainly helps Nash to have two. So like, I'm sure it wouldn't hurt right. Kidd to have one. So yeah, that's interesting.
And it's funny because they vote like story. A lot of the MVP, a lot of the criticism for a lot of people is that the MVP tends to just be like, this guy was the best story of the year. And like, this team had the most dramatic like change when he came. You know what I mean? Like, whereas he seems like just an obvious candidate for that sort of narrative driven MVP that a lot of times happens. And then instead they gave it to like the boring guy that was really good. And it's right. Like, well, no, yeah. Like you don't do that every other year. You just do it this year. Like, so it's kind of funny. And not that Duncan didn't deserve it, but you know, there's, at times, and I'm fine with Duncan winning it, obviously, but it's funny how then, you know, a few years later, you get a guy like Nash who, you know, people still will argue, oh my God, you know, it should have been Shaq or, you know, whatever. But it was like, well, Nash was the story. You know, he comes to Phoenix, you know, he brings these guys and like, he's the best story of the year. He's that. So it's kind of funny, or people bring up the value, you know, argument, and that turns into funny. But it's just funny how this particular case where you have such a great story, narrative driven MVP, and then they just give it to Tim Duncan because he's the best player in the league.
Yeah, I think the similar question, if the Nets had won the 03 finals, which actually is closer than I think is generally remembered. Like, that was a fairly tight series early on, and then obviously the Spurs pulled away, but it wasn't like the insane blowouts like some of the other, like the Lakers series were during that time. But
or Todd McCullough. Todd McCullough had no chance.
Exactly. So, I do think he's pretty safely in. Again, we've talked about in other shows how there's quite a few strong guard candidates, and you know, the numbers game might get close, but I think, you know, he has enough that it's hard to argue against him being in. I guess the shooting's really the only you know, real issue, you know, kind of hurting some of the hurting him in terms of win shares. But other than that, you know, he's I think he's likely to make it.
Yeah, I agree. And real quick, that play was with Dallas against Atlanta. Yeah, which was the play you're talking about where he bumps into Mike Woodson.
Okay.
And when you search Jason Kidd in Google, that's like one of the first. It's like Jason Kidd, Mike Woodson. It's like, yeah, that people are actually looking for that play, which is awesome. But yeah, real quick, I had a couple other quick things. They're just kind of random things you come across when you're doing like this research. There's a clip of a game against the Bulls when he's in his second year, where he finished with 25, 15, 11, and 6 steals against the 96 Bulls. And that game actually went to overtime. Pippen had a tip-in at the buzzer or pretty much like 1 second left to send it to overtime. The Bulls ended up winning in overtime, of course. But it was a wild game, and it was actually really fun to watch, and Kidd was just a monster in it.
One thing I do think we have to talk about, and maybe it hurts is – Or possibly helps. I shouldn't immediately assume hurts. Is the blonde hair Jason Kidd in Phoenix phase?
Oh my God!
Hurt or help his candidacy, Adam?
Hurt. That may have been the deciding factor when we were looking at Nash or Kidd, why we bumped Nash just ahead of him.
But Nash had the Frosted Tips era, yeah, so let's not forget that. I mean,
that's true. I guess maybe Nash wasn't as good when he did that, so maybe that's why it doesn't hurt him as much.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, that could be a make or break. I mean, if it's between the two, it's
tough, you know. Yeah, I mean, I think Jason Kidd generally had better hair throughout most of his career. You know, Nash also had, like, the stringy long hair that didn't always work for him. So it's a tough call. It's the kind of tough calls we're going to have to make when we, you know, pare down our final list. We'll see how it goes. All right, Adam, anything else?
No, I think that's good. I mean, he's a really fun player to research. I was happy to do him.
Cool. Well, thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us at hardwoodparoxysm.com. We also have our forums at overandbacknba.com, which you can check out. There's a lot of good discussion there about different players and different fun things. Check us out on Twitter and Facebook at overandbacknba. And we also have a new iTunes feed for the Over and Back podcast. So if you search for Over and Back, go to iTunes, search for Over and Back, and give us a rating and or review. We would greatly appreciate it. It would help other people find us and check us out. So until next time, thanks.